Welcome to Season 7 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast. This is where we chat with experts in the field, patients who use these devices, physical therapists, and the vendors who make it all happen. Our goal? To share stories, tips, and insights that ultimately help our patients get the best possible outcomes. Tune in and join the conversation. We are thrilled you are here and hope it is the highlight of your day.
Hi, everyone. My name is Joris Peels, and this is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. How are you doing, Brent?
Man, I'm doing well, man. How is the weather where you're at in Spain? Does it ever get bad, or
it's horrible?
Just always
it's
nice.
Terrible. We have to wear sweaters outside. It's really bad. I've been wearing pants for weeks now, like 3-4 weeks. I've been wearing pants, and now I have to wear sweaters, and it may even get as bad as we need a jacket. So it's terrible. How about you?
So is that during the day too? Does it warm enough to where you can get a short sleeve shirt in or anything?
No, it doesn't. I have to wear. I'm wearing a sweater all day now. I don't know how I'm coping.
Yeah. Well, for us, man, our weather doesn't know what to do. It's hot and cold. Yeah. I know this is a crazy question, are you gonna partake in any American festivities like Thanksgiving or anything? Like,
no.
You know, some sweet potato stuff and some turkey and all that?
No, we don't do Thanksgiving. But although you would maybe find this really strange, although Halloween is huge here now, right? And this is only a few years ago, and all of a sudden, like, Halloween came out of nowhere, and now everybody, especially like kind of like teenagers, I guess, and like a little bit older kids, they do know Halloween. There's always Halloween parties, so that's the one holiday that's really getting a foothold here. But Thanksgiving, not so much.
Okay, next year we're gonna fly you to the U.S. You and your girlfriend, and you're gonna come enjoy the right style Thanksgiving.
Oh no, what is that? I'm not coming if you fry the turkey, because I've seen that go wrong on the internet so often. That I'm not doing that.
No, so our family, we do ham.
Okay.
But we also smoke the turkey.
Oh wow. Okay.
Which is quite delicious. But then one thing that you'll find as close to heaven as possible is my wife makes these things called sweet potato biscuits.
Okay. I have no idea what that is. Actually.
So a sweet potato is an orange potato.
No, we have those. Okay.
Okay. I'm like, man, how much do I have to explain to you? Come on. But anyway, so it's a biscuit recipe. It's been in her family for probably 75 years plus. Yeah. And they are phenomenal. So it's like a biscuit, but it's got a little bit of sweetness in it. Mm-hmm. It's perfect with a little bit of ham. You're good to go. So just go ahead and put it on your calendar.
Okay.
And we're going to make it happen. We're going to make this the Prosthetics and Orthotics.
But I don't know anything about American football, right? If we have this big American football kind of watching thing, it's going to be a bit awkward for us. We're going to be like sitting there going, like, how does this work?
You know, for us, football isn't a big part of Thanksgiving day. I mean, we may have it on a little bit, but most of the time it's between eating and napping, that's about all we do.
Okay.
All right. A good time.
Okay, that's gonna be interesting, dude. That's gonna be interesting. All right, thank you for the invitation, dude. Thank you so much. So who's on the show today, Mom?
We put them through just all that, but we've got Chris Hanford on the show. He's the chief product officer at Vorum. And I'm just really excited to have him on the show because he's really moved up the ladder in Vorum. So he started off as a customer service success leader, and then now he's moved to the chief product officer, and he's really seen the evolution of digitization in O&P. And so I think the insight that he may be able to give us on really that process and what resonates, what doesn't resonate, what, scanning, design, and then also going from the side of the carving, where a lot of people were carving their positive models, to now this idea of 3D printing and how their company has pivoted and navigated through some of these will be very interesting. So I'm really excited to have him on the show.
Okay, cool. Me too. Welcome, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, guys. Pleasure to be here.
So first of all, so how did you get started in O&P, Chris?
So it's a story. I went to school for electrical engineering, and a lot of my coursework was around telecommunications and and cellular technology. And I graduated in 2001 from my undergrad, and that was at Queen's University in Canada. And in 2001, I don't know if you remember, there was a bit of a correction in the market. The dot-com bubble burst, and me and all of my colleagues that I was graduating with, we all had a tough time finding work. People were being let go from jobs even before they started. And it was a tough time to be looking for work. So I guess for better or worse, it made us look in other areas. And I found, I'm based in Vancouver, and I found this local company, Vorum, that was doing some pretty cool technology that was, loosely related to what I'd studied. It was all about CAD-CAM technology, which I had been exposed to in my studies. But it was from a more clinical perspective. That certainly attracted me. Because I hadn't even really thought of that before. I didn't really know anything about O&P before joining with Vorum. And that's really kind of how it, all started. From there, I started in the, in the support team. We were, supporting customers remotely and helping them with technical issues. But I would also be on the road doing implementations, installations, and training. We were quite a smaller team back then, so we had to wear many hats. And that, so the nice thing there is I got to go out in the field, actually working with customers in their space. Helping them, get using the technology, but also learning what it is they're really trying to do with it. So that was, a really, really great experience at that time in my career.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things is like you got to visit a lot of your customers. So, there must be a huge diversity in bigger, smaller practices, regional practices, super specialized practices, people that do just about anything. Like, can you tell us a little bit about that crazy variety of O&P shops, let's say, they have out there?
Yeah, no, it's true. You get different organizations have different focus and, different countries. A lot of it can come down to, what type of devices are reimbursed more than others. If there's, it's actually interesting where we found the biggest benefit for CAD is actually when those reimbursements are going lower. People are forced into a change. They have to find a way to be more efficient and effective. So that will change by country and by how people out there, how practitioners and how the clinics are getting paid, really impacts where they find the biggest benefit for the technology. But at the end of the day, on the flip side, I would say that there is a lot of overlap between, people making prosthetic devices in the United States or in Canada versus Europe and Asia. I think at the end of the day, they're dealing with humans. They're dealing with patients. And they're trying to do the best they can to have a great clinical result for their patient. While at the same time, make a living and have a successful business. It's been interesting where you go to other countries and at the end of the day they're all kind of doing similar stuff. The focus might be on different devices, but they're still dealing with patients at the end of the day. So that's been, I think, a big learning for me over the years.
Is it so? Because like what always comes up is is that basically this O&P profession is kind of under pressure from all sides, like by the government on the one hand, maybe in some countries, in other countries, much more by insurance companies, in other countries, like there's a lot of pricing pressure on this market. Is that true in a lot of places, or is that just our perception because it keeps coming up?
I think that's it's always going to be a thing, and even if even if reimbursement rates don't change, costs might change, right? So at the end of the day, again, you still gotta find a way to pay for what you do, but still provide the best service, best care you can for the patient.
I think what's interesting and what you said is like a lot of people are reaching out to you because of the cost difference and that sort of thing, but How would you say Vorm has changed over the years? I mean, 30 plus years, right? And so what were the core values back then? And maybe what were the attraction of the, you know, the ideal customer then, to say how that has shifted over the last 30 years?
Yeah, no, good question. You know, at the beginning, you know, with bringing any new technology to the market, you're really looking for those early adopters, some people that have like the long-term vision of how technology can be applied. And even if it's not, you know, 100% ready, they're ready to kind of to get in with it and get in early and get a jump on the market. Maybe there, you know, of course, different reasons people would do that as early adopters. And you know, people, potentially with some vision to, be that local thought leader, regional thought leader, be one step ahead and also help in bringing technology to their region. In the past, we would deal more directly with, you know, single clinics. You know, we had some start in the US, but actually Europe is where we had our, I think, biggest growth in the 90s. From there, you know, things did evolve over time. More recently, I would say, our core customer is more the partner. You know, it could be a distributor, could be a large hospital network. So we do find it is easier to get our technology, you know, more broadly into the market when we don't have to be the one to go and, you know, install and train on each scanner that goes out in the field. So how can we get the biggest number how can we get the biggest impact out in the market with our technology? And we found that's through regional partners. Over time, that's really become the way that we can, you know, stretch our wings a bit more. You know, more bang from our buck on, you know, internally on the corporate side. And then we're dealing with people out in the field that actually speak the local language, can do local support, and understand the local issues and challenges of clinics in their region. So that has been an evolution over time. And certainly we have many, you know, direct customers still and loyal customers that love dealing with us directly and we're happy to. But we found over time that as we evolve and grow our partner and distributor network, that that's been the overall benefit for Vorm. So.
And so a little bit, like, you know, I have no idea. Tell us a little bit. I have no idea, of course, about the ins and outs of Vorm, where Brent, of course, knows everything about them. So tell us a little bit about what Vorm is and what you guys do.
Yeah, so I can speak a little bit where we started. Carl Saunders is the founder. He started doing research for CAD/CAM technology back in the late 70s, if you can believe it, working out of UBC. There was a medical engineering research, medical engineering resource unit. He was working with Jim Fort, and Jim Fort was a pioneer. From that, Carl got into the technology, and was the one that really decided, okay, I'm going to, bring this to the market. So he created Vorm, in 1989 is when Vorm, became a company. At the time was really just, focused on making the CAD software, like how you, take a scan or digitized shape, at the time and, modify it so that it could be carved in a carver. And over the years, you know, dealing with other issues, you know, having to integrate with different scanning technology and different carvers, you know, we evolved the company to really be able to provide that sort of end-to-end solution, scan, design, and carve. And fast forward some 34, almost 35 years. And, you know, 3D printing is another thing that's come in along the way and has matured enough that, you know, it's really, it can be used to benefit the workflow.
And then, so the first thing is, like, we've been talking a lot about people using, like, kind of general CAD software, kind of like, you know, like Fusion 360 or whatever. Other people using kind of these more wizard-based CAD. So what's the real advantage of having like a dedicated, like, OMP kind of CAD/CAM solution?
Yeah. So the nice thing, I mean, for I think our customers value is just to have the end to end is, you know, it means many things, but of course you have one number to call for support, you know, one provider that has to ensure the whole solution works. Because if you're dealing with individual providers, you know, there's a lot of finger pointing it must be that your scanner's not calibrated, or maybe some, you know, somebody says the design software's not working or the carver's not calibrated. So when you have that one number to call, there is, you know, there's reassurance that, you know, there's one place to help solve the problem. But in terms of how we develop the products, we have a much bigger overview of the whole workflow of the solution. So, you know, from, you know, the preparation of the patient, even before scanning, right? So we know what should be done in terms of preparing the patient for the scan. That scan is not just a shape when it goes into the design software, because we can attach with it a bunch of clinical information about the patient, digital landmarking, things that we know are going to be needed in the design step. And all of that can be done at the front end, so that when whoever's doing the design, whether that's the same scanning practitioner or another, you know, CAD designer or a central fab, they have the information that's needed to do the correct modifications that the practitioner had in mind and that the patient needs. So the data flows, you know, from scanner to design to carve, and us having sort of a control of that whole workflow means that we can ensure the final result is really what was expected by the practitioner at the beginning.
Okay, that's a good approach. And then, so first off, you guys came out first with the Carver solution. So right now, is Carver something that a lot of people are still using? You're going to sell that? Is that the main focus still, or is it just one of the things you could do?
It's one of the things you could do. There's a lot of interest in 3D printing. You know, I would say 6 or 7 years ago, everyone went out and got themselves a little desktop printer and, you know, tinkered with it. And that was a great tool for people to learn how the technology works. But, you know, I think at the same time, some people were, you know, either frustrated or disillusioned, or, you know, didn't really have the faith that it could be something that worked in their practice clinically, you know, for actual like sockets and braces. Ultimately, it became something that for many people that became, oh, I can do a widget or a fixture or an adapter. That's, you know, that's what we've seen in the field. So I think as a result of that, there's still a lot more confidence in the market in through carving. So carving is still our biggest, our biggest business, if you'll say. And a lot of clinical processes are still built around that, that carved positive model. You know, you can do all the traditional stuff you used to do on plaster. So there is that, I think, that comfort level, and that confidence that people still have with carving, and that's why it's still a majority of what we do. But we, of course, we do have 3D printing as well. We have several customers that are using the 3D print design capabilities that we have in CanFit to send jobs to various 3D printers. So we work with Ascentium ourselves on a FDM, as they would say, FFM or FFF printer. CanFit can be used and integrated with any other printer as well. So it's just about designing the shape. So we do have that capability, and we do have a few customers that are, I would say, being pretty pretty progressive and leading the way in that new 3D printing space. So I think that is coming more and more as we progress. You know, the split between carving and printing is the needle still continues to go a little bit more to 3D printing, you know, year over year. So it's a matter of time when that's, you know, I would say the focus and the majority of what our customers do. But still today, carving is the majority.
And if we're looking at a carver, like, why would I get a carver? It's like, is this something I want in house, or, you know, do I have to have a certain amount of volume to warrant getting one of these things?
That usually it comes down to that. How much volume do you have? How much space do you have? Right. So it does take up some floor space, to have a carver in house and to store a few blocks. And probably a little bit more than one pallet of a little bit of plaster. What we've seen typically, if you're a single clinic, unless you're doing a really high volume, you probably don't have your own carver. You might be leveraging, various central fabricators. And that's generally where people start even before they even think of a carving. You can get started with just scanning, send a scan to a company to do the design and fabrication. Or you can scan and design yourself and then scan that, send that final design off to a central fabricator where, again, they could be carving it or they could be 3D printing it. And it really just depends on the kind of work you do and what makes sense from a clinical perspective and from a, financial perspective.
And is there do you have an idea, like you have to do so many AFL, is there like a number I can think of to give me a bit idea when I should definitely call you or where I should kind of think about it? Or
you can call us anytime. happy to help. We do have we've developed a tool to help customers do an ROI calculation. And, you say what kind of devices you're doing and what's your reimbursement on those and what's your volume and how much time are you spending modifying? So there's, of course, for every clinic, it's going to be very different. So we can kind of give people a sense of what makes sense for them. But these are, usually back of the napkin kind of thing when you can say, wow, I'd be saving a lot of money by going to CAD, or maybe not. Maybe it's not the time for you right now. Speaking of that calculation, of course I hear it usually secondhand, but that it sounds like there's a challenge with cost of plaster in the industry. So I think we've been getting a bit more calls than normal based on that calculation, because people find that even doing it themselves is more costly than it used to be. So, maybe that means it's time to switch, maybe not. Usually it's some sort of pain point or something that makes people think maybe I should be doing things differently.
Okay, that's cool. That sounds good. And then also you guys have like scanning solutions, right? So you go like from the capture all the way to the production, right? So tell us about your scanners.
I won't get into the long history of scanners we've had to work with, but I'll speak to a couple of them at least. So Spectra 3D scanner is one we've had out in the market for about 10 years. And it's a structured light scanner. It is, very accurate. It's on par with, a Creaform type scanner in terms of accuracy. Our Spectra is up to 0.1 millimeters of accuracy, and it allows you to get the full 3D data as well as the texture image and the digital landmarks. So you get all of that included in the scan. You don't need reflective marks or anything like that. You can basically just, you can scan the patient directly. What is good to do, of course, is, setting up the patient. You mark, important landmarks, draw trim lines you might want later to sketch it right on the patient, limb or on their stockinette or something. And then all that information comes through into CanFit. So you have all that information at your disposal when you're designing. It's such a level up from what we had to work with, 15, 20 years ago, in terms of, not just having the 3D surface, but also having that visual, information as well. The Spectra you can scan a patient with Spectra and send that scan to Orth America for a helmet. So Orth America have a 510K to produce their Starband with a Spectra scan. So that's, a good thing for people that want to have sort of a portable option as well as be able to do helmets and as well as any other kind of device they want to do. So that's really kind of Spectra in a nutshell. And again, that's been out in the field for some years. And when you compare it to, costs of some of the high-end scanners, it was quite an attractive offer, especially 10 years ago. And now, we're competing with lower cost scanners out in the field. So we did, think about, what is it that we can do to I wouldn't say necessarily compete with the free scanners or the low cost scanners, but what is it about those scanners that has been attractive to the market? So, you know, we've seen that people love to be able to just pull out their phone or pull out a small iPad and be able to scan the patient, digitize that. So we developed this new scanner. So this is Luma 3D scanner, and it's a more mobile solution. So it's smaller. It can clip onto a tablet. It works with a Microsoft Windows interface, so the software is installed on Windows. It's optimized for a Surface Pro tablet. So again, that nice mobile solution where you can kind of take it anywhere. And what's extra, I would say, something special about Luma is that you can use it either kind of clipped to the tablet like you would a structure sensor, or you can use it in tether mode. So you can attach instead the longer cable and use it like you would a corded scanner. So why that's interesting is for certain shape types, you know, think of scanning a patient for the residual limb for a prosthesis or around the back of an AFO from different sides. It's nice to be able to see the screen all the time when you're scanning and not have to tilt and bend your head around to kind of see what's on the screen as you scan. So that is something that's, you know, we think is unique for that level of scanner. The Luma, we have a bit more flexible price options. So we have a kind of a pay-per-use model or an annual lease where you get unlimited scans for the year. So rather than paying, you know, over, let's say, $10,000 or something for a scanner for a Spectra, you could be, you know, paying much less. And it's a way to get started for a lower, for a lower investment, and also ensure that the technology is working for you. We found many of our customers are in a hospital or in clinics where IT doesn't necessarily love working with Apple products, and that's no diss on Apple products. They're very cool and work well, but there are IT organizations that prefer just to work with Microsoft. So that's been another advantage for Luma that we found over the years. So.
You mentioned just getting started. I mean, that seems to be, at least in the experience that I've seen, it's like the paralyzation of clinicians at O&P is like, where do I start? I have all these options. But I did not know some of these options of just getting started. Can you share with us a little bit of what it looks like and maybe, you know, what you're comfortable with sharing on the, like, on the low end, the financial, like the pay per use, what does that look like? Just to get going. Cause what Joris and I always say is you need to take a first step. Yeah. So whether it's, you know, using something like as an end to end solution, like what you guys have, or, you know, YouTubing some videos, just start somewhere. But some people may find like this end to end solution that's already been validated very attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it totally, you know, I probably won't get into prices too specifically here, but just in general, you know, just on the theme of getting started, we mentioned scanning as a way to get started. It sure is. There is also a way to get started without scanning, believe it or not. So we have many of our, you know, central fabrication partners where many people do this today. They, you know, take some measurements off a patient and some photos and maybe an x-ray, and they send that off to their favorite, you know, central fabricator. And of course, the central fab is using CAD in the back end, and they're using library models and things to create the designs and prepare the custom device and send that back. So even though you don't see the technology, you kind of know it's working in the back end, and you can kind of get some comfort level or let's say some confidence in how the technology works. And then you're right. And the next logical step is just I just want to scan a shape. And there's many ways that you can get started with scanning. And I would be surprised if there's people out there that haven't downloaded a free app and tried it. But that's really the idea just to see how it might work in the process of fitting a patient. You do want to know. You do want to be working with a technology partner. So generally that's going to be, you know, a central fabricator again, that has that full end to end in the back end, right? That they use to produce the device. And they are going to be one of the best, resources to guide you on, you know, what it is that they need to do their job well. So they may be the ones to say, you know, these are a list of approved scanners. These are the ones that we know and we have confidence in, because they know it's garbage in, garbage out. I'm sure you guys have said that many times in the, in this podcast, and it's probably well understood for most that have already used the technology. But yeah, it's about, you know, reaching out to people that are using the technology today and talking to them about what they do. You know, that's usually the greatest way to get started. You know, I would say don't ask one person, ask a bunch of people and go to the trade show and talk around and see what people are using. You know, when you use the central fabricator, what's interesting is depending on the sort of business model that they have, you might be charged for the units to do a scan. You may not be charged for the units to do a scan. You might be provided the scanner and just, you know, only the scans can go to that provider. And it actually doesn't cost you anything. You're just tied to using that provider. So, I think there's many ways that people can think about, oh, I'll just give this a try. I didn't realize I could actually get started for no cost. Or maybe, you know, there's, you know, generally there's some cost. And if nothing else, there's your time is a cost. So don't forget, your time to get started with a new provider. You're going to invest a bit of time to get, you know, to know what they do and how they do it, and learn what it is that they need. But yeah, in terms of the, you know, getting started, those are a couple of ways that they can do that. And they might find actually the cost is a lot lower than they might have expected.
So it sounds like a first step would be like talking to a contract manufacturer or like one of your partners that maybe already have some sort of, you know, forum services and then seeing where to go.
Absolutely.
From there.
So again, okay. People are welcome to give us a call anytime. We're happy to point them in the direction. A few partners that, you know, we know and love. And if we're speaking just in the US, of course we have many worldwide, but in the US, you know, folks like Spinal Tech, Ortho America, Friddles, has been one of our partners for many years. And they know our stuff inside and out. And others, sometimes, you know, they shout from the mountaintops that they're, you know, that they're a Vorum, that they use Vorum in their workflows. And sometimes they don't. So we have other folks, partners that, may not share that actually they use Vorum, but in the back end that they do that. So yeah, those are just a few to name, but, so you can give them a call, you can give us a call. But in general, just, you know, talk. It is a small industry, and I find that's usually not the challenge, is getting people to talk to other people. People tend to do that.
So one thing we keep talking about, this is whole like the central fab and how a mom and pop kind of shop, a smaller kind of regional or city based or neighborhood type shop, how they can thrive in this new world. Like, so there could be some strategies. You could outsource everything and be kind of like great at just saying hi to patients, maybe taking the data, for example, scanning. So you could specialize in scanning and being friendly to people, networking, right? You could maybe specialize on being upper extremity for kids and then sports and be really, really specialized and outsource everything else. Or you could try to kind of differentiate yourself in different ways. So how would you recommend that these mom and pop shops, these smaller shops, really thrive in this developing environment?
Yeah, I do think, you know, especially for smaller clinics, it does make a lot of sense to, you know, to do what you know, right? To, you know, what are you good at? What is your reason for being there? Like, why are you seeing patients? And why are the patients coming to you? And just, you know, that's, I think, a more general business question as opposed to, a clinical, or especially not a technology question. But when you get to, okay, so how am I going to provide that to the customer? Then it becomes, okay, I know how to do this with plaster. I've been doing this for many years. And what's the best outcome for the patient? And what is the best process? What's going to be the best experience for the patient? So looking from the technology angle, you know, it is a much more modern, cleaner, convenient and comfortable experience for the patient. And, you know, trying to compete with other, you know, clinics, you know, you have to, you know, I'm biased, but I would say you have to think about what is the aesthetic, what's the experience for the patient. And if you are, you know, sitting there casting each patient, the guy across the street is doing all this digital stuff, he's probably, you know, promoting and marketing how he's doing things digitally, you know, that you have to, you know, think, how am I going to compete with that? So, you know, it doesn't necessarily just come down to cost at the end of the day. There's also like, how am I going to attract patients? So that's another aspect of it. And in terms of the, you know, one thing that also makes me think of, you know, mom and pops, often, you know, many of them have been around for many years, and there's a lot of pride in what they do, and they've refined their process and how they care for patients over the years. And technology is a way to kind of encapsulate, to kind of store that expertise and that knowledge. It's not necessarily about, you know, following what everyone else is doing. Technology can actually be used to keep what you do that special and to kind of retain that internally. So a lot of our customers will, you know, create their own, you know, custom workflows, you know, and that's something that they have that special to themselves, and can keep that difference, that differentiation of, you know, what makes their clinic special, you know, and separate, but also make it easier to pass on to others, because as people retire, they still want to provide that care to their customers. The customers may not be going anywhere, but they want that same kind of care when they retire or move on to other things. And there's, you know, I've seen this too over the years. The new practitioners coming out of school, they're experts in the technology already when they come out in the field. So for them to be able to adopt it, and help in, you know, providing whatever it is you do, you know, they're ready to help you do that. So that's been, you know, something. And I know it's a bit of a tangent from where we started on that question, but I think it all kind of comes back around to what you can do as a small clinic, you know, to stay, independent, and also maybe, you know, have that expertise, that speciality that you focus on, the reason that your patients are coming to you.
Okay, that's really awesome. And for you guys, for example, like, what does the future hold? Because like, you're seeing all these small 3D printers, big 3D printers, tons of scanners. Do you want to be that central nexus, like, that connects all these things to the practitioner? Or are you going to keep being like this end-to-end solution provider for some of these paths? Or what are you guys going to be providing?
Yeah, so I mean, we, you know, Vorm will always be doing the end-to-end solution. That doesn't mean that a clinic has to purchase the full end-to-end solution. So I want to just make sure that you know, we make that clear. We do have an open system where if somebody has an old, you know, an old machine, they can use that old machine. We can connect to other things. We do have the best confidence and faith in the solution when it's the full end-to-end. People using scanning, again, if they send their scanner off to central fabricator, that fabricator, you know, may have our stuff in the back end. So still that workflow is still, you know, an end-to-end Vorm workflow. So that's, you know, again, probably answering another question, but just in terms of how that end-to-end works, that's always been our focus and what we do. And the end-to-end can be scan, design, carve. The end-to-end can be scan, design, print. So you can do the full workflow end-to-end, whether it's carving or 3D printing. And that seems to be, you know, the technology undoubtedly will change over time. You know, printers will change, printers will improve. Carvers will still, I think, be a key part for certain devices, you know, at least for the foreseeable future. So that I think will still be, you know, in our blood of, you know, what Vorm does. But yeah, it is a thing that we do see over time. You know, of course, especially on the scanning end, there's a million more scanners out in the market than there ever were before. So we are not necessarily, you know, expecting that we are going to be the only scanner that the market uses. But we do know that if people select our scanner, we know how it works. We know it can be successful for them, and and that just is really the first step in that, you know, that whole end-to-end, in that whole end-to-end process.
So Chris, we've talked about, you know, the scanning end-to-end solution, that sort of thing. We haven't really talked about some of the modification stuff that can be done, whether it's AFOs, prostheses, orthoses, prostheses. And then, you know, I'm looking and you guys have this idea of SurePath, but then also, I mean, over 30 years, you've gotten, you know, a lot of feedback on your software. So I know having that data and feedback has allowed you to get better at that. But can you share a little bit about maybe the modification workflow and then how this or what is SurePath and how that has come to be?
Yeah. So a couple of separate ideas here. So in terms of the modification workflow, so CanFit Design is our I would say the cornerstone of our technology, of our end-to-end solution. You know, we can really design anything from head to foot within CanFit. And when we speak about workflows, we have a feature within CanFit called macros. So macros is a way that customers can record their own process, their own modification steps for whatever it is they do, and be able to repeat that on every patient going forward. So we provide, you know, some templates, some standardized macros for customers, but ultimately they end up creating their own workflows, their own macros. So, you know, when you do the same thing 1,000 times, it helps to automate those things. You know, the key with the macros that we have in CanFit is it's not a one click and everything's done automatically because every patient's different. So the macro allows you to go through standard steps, but still have control of adapting as you go for each patient's needs. So it's, you know, it's kind of like semi-automatic in a way, but still giving the choice to the practitioner or the designer, of how they want to, provide that feature or that correction for that specific patient. So that's really when we're talking about workflows in CanFit Design, that's really what that means, is it's a way to do things much more efficiently and just make the decisions you need to do for each patient for them to be successful. SurePath is another kind of idea. So it's more of like a how Vorum provides our technology to customers. So SurePath is it's kind of a name for our customer success program. Customer success is something that comes up a lot in you know, software as a service companies, but it's something that we've adopted because of all the experience we have had. We've seen all the pitfalls and all the things that can go wrong in adopting technology, and it's a way to steer customers back on track to ensure they're meeting their business goals and being successful with the technology. So SurePath really starts, you know, as soon as you give Vorum a call, that we understand what it is you really want to do with the solution. And that we create, you know, SurePath goals. We understand what it is you're trying to do. Those goals really feed into the implementation and training that we do to make sure we're giving the customer what they need to be successful for what they do. And then it also means we have a proactive support. So we can't assume that a customer that doesn't call us has been successful. For us, no news is not good news. so we have to give them a call. We have to check in with them. And ultimately, the ultimate question is, are they being successful in meeting the goals that they had with the solution? Are they getting out of it what they wanted to? And if not, that could be for a number of reasons. Could be, you know, they were distracted in the training. It could have been you know, maybe there is technical issue with a computer or something. So depending on the issue, that proactive support allows us to go in there and see if they're having challenges, and then feed it back into either, you know, a technical support, could be, you know, more training is needed. But it's a way just to make sure we steer them back on course, because many customers over the years, and you've probably seen this, Brent, is people get excited about a technology, they get it in, there's a lot of hype, they run into a challenge, and then they go back to doing plaster. And that's what we're trying to prevent. So that's what the SurePath program is all about. We actually have a person, their whole role is SurePath in our company. You know, just to make sure that the customers are being successful, because technology is cool and it can be a marketing tool. And if that's all you need it for, that's great. But ultimately, you have a job to do. You have to serve your patients, and your patients have to be well cared for. And you don't want the patients coming back, you know, two or three times to have that well-fitted device. So, you know, whatever success means to you, that's what SurePath is for. So it's not, you know, we have certain metrics even on the website about the sort of improvements that you can see in the workflow or efficiency. but it really depends on what it is that the technology can help you do. So so we listen to the customer on that. And that's been really successful in being able to understand the benefits of the technology and understand where there may be gaps as well. You know, from a product side, I certainly try to learn a lot from that program to see what it is that the customers are missing, because that helps me kind of steer things in a direction that ultimately, again, goes back to their success.
All right. Hey, Chris, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
And Brent, thank you for being here once again.
Oh, this has been good. I really enjoyed hearing some of the history and that stuff of the Vorum. And I like that there's a menu. So I think that's neat as far as an end-to-end solution.
For sure.
So I think that's really cool.
No, thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure, and thanks for your time.
And thank you for listening. This is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright and Maurice Peels. Have a great day.